Again, it's great to see everyone out here this morning. I think this lesson, which is the first in of two parts, Lord willing, next Sunday we will finish it. We have an option of staying for about an hour, hour and a half this morning, or we can split it up into two. My guess was it was splitting it up into two that sounded better. But it's an extremely important biblical subject. It's on forgiveness, but more specifically, it's on how to ask for forgiveness. And you might think, well, isn't that obvious? But after this morning's lesson, I think you'll see that no, it's not that obvious. You know, you and I have this sense of right and wrong. It's innate. It's within us. And when our idea of what's right is violated by someone, then we can become angry. We can become resentful. And the two people cannot live as though the wrong had not been committed. Often people try and do that. It does not work. The two involved cannot just live as though nothing happened. The relationship is broken to some degree. But the need and hopefully the desire for reconciliation is great. What fixes it? What's needed? A sincere, heartfelt apology. That's what's needed. And without it, if that never occurs, things will only get worse. That is what is necessary. A sincere, heartfelt apology. And then when the one offended truly forgives, the door is open now to have a fixed relationship, a new relationship, and maybe even better. But what is involved in a sincere, heartfelt apology? And that's what I want to turn our attention to this morning and next Sunday morning. What is involved when we apologize? What do we need to do? And again, I think you'll see some, I think your eyes will be opened to some things that maybe you have not thought about. In his book, The Five Languages of Apology, Gary Chapman discusses five elements that he thinks that are necessary when we make an apology. So I'm going to kind of use those five as springboards into the Bible to see what the Bible says about what it means to sincerely apologize, to come from your heart. Number one is expressing regret. Expressing regret. And if you've not taken notes in the past on any sermon I've ever given, and that's fine, I would on this one and next Sunday mornings, that's for sure. That's how important I think it is. What does it mean to express regret? Usually, this is expressed in the form of, I'm sorry. But it's amazing how often we do not voice those words. I'm sorry. But they're essential in expressing regret. We must do it. Why is it so important? Because it expresses your sense of guilt over what you've done. It expresses and shows your sense of shame over what you've done. And now it focuses on what you did or maybe failed to do. Sometimes we need to say we're sorry for something we did not do that we should have. It also shows how it affected the other person. When we say, I'm sorry, this shows and acknowledges to the other person that we understand ourselves that we have caused pain to that other person, that we've affected them in some sort of negative way. The person that we've offended must know, though, must know that our apology is sincere. And this is often where body language is so important. And that's why apologies need to be given face-to-face. It's very important that they're given face-to-face. Because body language will tell you quite often whether that apology is sincere or not. You know, if you say you're sorry and roll your eyes, or if you say I'm sorry when you're yelling, or any number of things, well, this automatically tells the other person that you're not really sincere. You're just saying it to say it. So if we want to have a heartfelt apology, we need to show to that person that we really mean it. That when we say I'm sorry, we are sorry. And that person needs to hear what we're sorry for. In other words, I'm sorry for whatever it is you did. And we need to be as specific in our apology as we possibly can be. Think about all the things that's happened throughout time where if a sincere apology would have been given, things would have been so much better. So we need to state what we did wrong. I'm sorry for not doing this, or I'm sorry that I did this. Whatever it is. This shows we know how much we hurt them and how our actions affected them. Because maybe they became angry, or they were disappointed, or they felt betrayed. On and on and on the emotions, the feelings can go. So when we say I'm sorry, we need to point out that I'm sorry for, and be specific about what we're sorry for. Because the other person needs to hear it. You know, I'm sorry for spreading that rumor about you, or I'm, you know, whatever it is, we need to be very specific to that other person. That other person needs to hear that we're expressing regret for a specific thing that we have done. And a sincere apology, a sincere regret, is never, under any circumstances, followed by but. I'm sorry I spread that rumor, but, because that completely cancels out the apologies, and you might as well have not said a word. So never, ever follow an apology by an excuse, because that excuse completely cancels out the apology. One of the most, well, in my opinion, one of the most beautiful accounts of forgiveness is in the Old Testament account of Jacob and Esau. In Genesis 33, let's go there now and read that. It's kind of a lengthy reading, but it's too great to not read. Teaches us a lot about apology and forgiveness. Genesis 33, we'll begin in verse 1. Genesis 33, verse 1. Now Jacob lifted his eyes and looked, and there Esau was coming, and with him were 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two maidservants. And he put the maidservants and their children in front, Leah and her children behind, and Rachel and Joseph last. Then he crossed over before them and bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And he lifted his eyes and saw the women and children and said, "Who are these with you?" So he said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." Notice how he describes himself as your servant. He's expressing regret. Then the maidservants came near, they and their children, and bowed down. And Leah also came near with her children, and they bowed down. Afterward, Joseph and Rachel came near, and they bowed down. Notice, all of them came and bowed down. And Leah also came near with her children, and they bowed down. Then Esau said in verse 8, "What do you mean by all this company which I met?" And he said, "These are to find favor in the sight of my Lord." But Esau said, "I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." And Jacob said, "No, please. If I have now found favor in your sight, then receive my present from my hand, inasmuch as I have seen your face as though I had seen the face of God, and you were pleased with me." Please take my blessing that is brought to you because God has dealt graciously with me and because I have enough. So he urged him and he took it. That's one of the greatest examples in the Bible of forgiveness. It also shows attitude. You know, when I talked about sincere, and it needs to be heartfelt. Well, Esau saw that in Jacob. Saw sincerity, saw that attitude of wanting to make things right. Showing regret is an extremely important part of apologizing, is expressing regret. It's not enough, though. Now, some people may think, well, that's all I need to do, but it's not true. Number two is accepting responsibility. And we see this throughout the Bible taught. You know, many people, hopefully not us, but maybe us, many are reluctant to accept wrongdoing because they see it as a weakness. In other words, they see saying I'm sorry, saying that I've done something wrong, as a weakness in you. They try to justify themselves. They try to rationalize their bad behavior. And so they do not want to accept responsibility. Yeah, they may say I'm sorry, but they do not accept responsibility for what they've done. They're sorry it happened, but they do not want to accept responsibility for their actions. So they try to justify somehow to themselves and to other people their behavior. Some will say, it's not my fault. Or others will blame other people for it. He made me do it. Or I was forced to do it. Or some will blame it on their upbringing. Well, it was my parents' fault. Some people will blame it on their culture, the environment in which they grew up. I couldn't help it. Anytime someone does wrong, knowingly, it's their fault. Period. It's just their fault. And so accepting responsibility for the wrongs we've done shows that we understand it's not someone else's fault. It's not society's fault, government's fault, the school's fault, your neighbor's fault, parents' fault, or anybody else's fault. You show that you understand that it's your fault. You're the reason it happened. The other person, the one you're apologizing to, needs to know that you're accepting responsibility for what you did wrong. That's the mature thing to do. That shows maturity in a person when they're willing to accept responsibility. Some people, unfortunately, believe that admitting you made a mistake is like admitting you're a failure. In other words, when a husband apologizes to his wife, some will not do that because they believe, well, that means I'm a bad spouse. No, it doesn't. Or apologizing to your children means you're a bad parent. No, it doesn't. That just shows you're mature. It shows you're an adult. It shows that you're accepting responsibility. You did wrong because there aren't any perfect spouses. There aren't any perfect parents. And so accepting responsibility is a part of making that apology that is so important. The need to accept responsibility for your actions and admit you were wrong cannot be overemphasized. The person we're apologizing to needs to hear that I'm sorry for doing this. It was wrong. And it was my fault. In other words, it wasn't someone else's fault. It was my fault. And that person needs to hear it. They need to hear those words. They need to hear it come out of your mouth. Yes, I'm sorry for doing that. It was my fault. It was wrong. And I know it caused you pain. I know it hurt you. I know you felt betrayed. I know you were disappointed. I know you've become angry. And I accept responsibility for that. So making that confession of wrongdoing to the other person is essential in apologizing. Notice some examples from the Bible. Let's start with Aaron in Numbers chapter 12. And these are just a few. You could look at so many of them. But we can learn something from every single one of these examples. Numbers chapter 12. And we will begin in verse 1. We'll see the background to the problem. Numbers chapter 12, verse 1. Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. So they said, "Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also?" And the Lord heard it. Of course, the Lord was going to hear it, but notice the writer makes sure we understand that that's where the problem is. The Lord heard it. Aaron and Miriam were speaking against God's chosen spokesman. So by speaking against Moses, they were speaking against God. And of course, the Lord heard they were speaking against His chosen spokesman. Now, the man Moses was very humble, more than all men who were on the face of the earth. Remember, Moses didn't want the job. Moses wasn't proud and arrogant that he was God's spokesman. But Aaron and Miriam were causing problems. They were speaking against Moses. Well, the account goes on. Suddenly the Lord said to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, spoke to all of them, "Come out, you three, to the tabernacle of meeting." So the three came out. Then the Lord came down in the pillar of cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam, and they both went forward. Then he said, "Hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak to him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He's faithful in all my house. I speak with him face to face, even plainly and not in dark sayings. And he sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" So the anger of the Lord was aroused against him, and he departed. When the cloud departed from above the tabernacle, suddenly Miriam became leprous, as white as snow. Then Aaron turned toward Miriam, and there she was, a leper. So Aaron said to Moses, "Oh my Lord, please do not lay this sin on us in which we have done foolishly, and in which we have sinned." What did they do? They admitted wrong. They were telling Moses and God they were wrong. It was their fault. They weren't blaming Moses anymore. They weren't blaming anybody but themselves. They were accepting responsibility for what they had done. In 2 Samuel chapter 19, the case of Shimei, 2 Samuel chapter 19, beginning in verse 18. 2 Samuel 19, verse 18. Then a ferry boat went across to carry over the king's household and to do what he thought good. Now Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king when he had crossed the Jordan. Then he said to the king, "Do not let my lord impute iniquity to me, or remember what wrong your servant did on the day that my lord the king left Jerusalem, that the king should take it to heart. For I, your servant, know that I have sinned." Notice how specific he was. He was very specific about what he had done wrong. "Therefore, here I am, the first to come today of all the house of Joseph to go down to meet my lord the king." But Abishai the son of Zeruiah answered and said, "And shall not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed?" He accepted wrongdoing. He said, "You know, I was specific." He was specific about what he had done wrong and admitted that he had sinned. And how critical that is to admit sin. David, in one of the best examples in the Bible, in Psalm 51. Talks about how needful it is to accept wrongdoing. Psalm 51, the first three verses. "Have mercy upon me, O God, according to your loving kindness. According to the multitude of your tender mercies, blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin, for I acknowledge my transgressions and my sin is always before me. There he's asking for forgiveness. See, blot out my sin, blot out my iniquity. He says it's always before me. David wasn't going to blame anybody for it. He was going to accept wrongdoing because it was his fault and his only. And he accepted that responsibility. So when we say we're sorry and we're specific about what we've done, we need to make sure that they understand we're accepting responsibility for what we've done. It was our fault. And number three, and the last one for today, and Lord willing, we'll look at the next two next Sunday morning, is making restitution. How often this is forgotten. Making restitution. This is the idea of making things right. You know, this is just embedded in our human nature, and our justice system is built on the idea that there's right and wrong, and there's a sense of justice. You know, criminals are supposed to pay for what they've done. They're supposed to give to the victim in whatever way they can to make that restitution, to try and repay them. Restitution is defined as the giving of something as an equivalent for what has been lost or what has been damaged. This means making amends for what you've done. Whatever it is, however you've wronged the other person, one must try and make amends. Try and make restitution. Try and repay in whatever way is possible. Someone has stolen possessions. They need to repay. If someone's damaged property, they need to fix it in some way. Sometimes it's not physical things that you've done. Maybe you've hurt someone's feelings. Maybe you've hurt their self-esteem. Maybe you've hurt their reputation. So you need to do everything in your power to fix it. And the person that you're apologizing to needs to know that you're going to do that. That if you spread rumors about them, that you're going to do everything in your power to go to everybody that's heard that and tell them the truth. That's making restitution. So whatever is in your power to do, you're going to do it, regardless of the cost to you. That other person needs to hear it and know that that is your plan. And you're going to do everything you can. In relationships like families, the one that was hurt may need reassurance that they're still loved. In other words, a husband hurts his wife in some way. Well, the wife needs to have that reassurance. Well, how can he love me and do that? So reassurances are needed. And so the husband in that case needs to make amends, make restitution in whatever way he can possibly make it. In other words, what can I do to show you that I still care about you? Ask the person. You've wronged them, you've offended them, you've done something against them. Ask them. Just as honest and straightforward as possible, what can I do to show you that I still care about our relationship? Maybe it's with a friend, you know, a spouse, whatever. Whatever it is you've done. That's important. You can tell the other person how much you truly care for them. Use words that show affection and appreciation. You can do acts of kindness for them. Simple, thoughtful acts of service. You can spend quality time with them. Undivided attention with them. It's making whatever kind of amends are necessary for what you've done. And again, that can take the form of so many things. You remember, of course, the account of Zacchaeus and the restitution he made in Luke chapter 19. We have that account and of him telling Jesus about it. Luke chapter 19, verse 1. Then Jesus entered and passed through Jericho. Now behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus, who was a chief tax collector. And he was rich, and he sought to see who Jesus was, but he could not because of the crowd, for he was of short stature. So he ran ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was going to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him and said to him, "Zacchaeus, Make haste and come down, for today I must stay at your house. So he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. But when they saw it, they all complained, saying, he's gone to be a guest with a man who's a sinner. Then Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, look, Lord, I give half of my goods to the poor, and if I've taken anything from anyone by false accusation, I restore fourfold. Notice what he did. If I've taken anything falsely, in other words, that what wasn't due because he was a tax collector, he says, I don't just give him back that. I give him back four times as much. Zacchaeus was doing that to make sure that other person knew that he was sorry for the wrong that he had done. He was accepting responsibility for the wrong that he had done. And he was doing everything in his power to make amends, to make it right. And often, again, it just comes down to saying, how can I show you that I'm sorry, that I was wrong, and that I still care about this relationship? How can I show you? And then listen to what the other person says. Those three things go so far in making a sincere, heartfelt apology. Saying those things. Saying I'm sorry for some people is one of the hardest things to come out of their mouth. They just will not hardly ever admit that they're wrong. But one thing for anyone to ever enter heaven, at some point in their lives, they have to say they're sorry. Because they have to confess wrongs. The Bible's specific about it. There's no doubt about it. The Bible says we must have Christians, 1 John chapter 1, we have to continue to confess our wrongs. We have to continue to confess and say, I'm sorry. If it was something done just to God, then we say we're sorry to God. But often it's other people. And we must say, I'm sorry for what we've done. Admit that it's wrong, and if at all possible, make amends. It's so critical to a Christian's life. When someone comes to be baptized, we talk about repentance. Repentance is in essence saying that you're wrong. The kind of life you've been living is not the kind of life that God approves of. And that you're essentially turning your back on that old life. You're confessing that it was wrong. And that you're going to come to Christ and turn over a new leaf and lead a new life. This morning, David will lead us in an invitation song. It's inviting you to examine your life to see if you need to make changes. And if you do, we encourage you to do that while we stand and sing this song.